This is episode 375, dated Friday, August 30th, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Good to be here today. This is episode 375, dated Friday, August 30th, 2024. Allow me to introduce my friend, colleague, and co-host for today's program, Peter O'Toole. What's going on today, Peter?
Beautiful day here in Coos Bay, sunny, about 75 degrees. I am currently taking a break from a grandkid invasion, complete with water slides and lots of screaming and yelling and splashing. Great time we're having. Plus Domino's pizza. So what could be better than all that?
Yeah, exactly. Same weather over here, about 75, very dry. And we've gone through some dry patterns in the past couple of weeks. And we're loving every minute of it, that's for sure. I want to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do. Also, our media outlets, thank you for airing us when you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions, thank you for archiving our programs on my website. All you have to do to find these archives is go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and there you will have most of our archives before you, from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
Let me say hi to Linda Lambert and Deborah Joyce, two of our faithful listeners who are always sending us comments about our programs. Thank you, thank you, thank you for those. And also let me acknowledge Tim, our host for today, and Brad, our streamer. And because we are live streamed, let me give out our email address for those people who don't have it and who would like to send us their comments about our programs. Please feel free, and we encourage people to write to us at bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com.
Bob, before we introduce the guest, I want to acknowledge that several folks have written to me saying, we love the congressman, but we'd love somebody with a more conservative viewpoint on the show. And we are working towards that happening. We have somebody, actually, thanks to the congressman who is our guest today, from Newsmax. So keep an eye on the schedule. At some point, he will be on.
I'm well aware of these efforts, Peter, and let's hope for the best on that count. That's great.
Yeah.
And without further ado, let me welcome back once again a faithful, loyal regular to our show. Former New York Congressman John LeBoutelier is here with us once again. Congressman, how have you been?
Hello, Bob, and hello, Peter. I've been great, and I'm happy to be back with all of you. And sorry that some viewers take issue with my lack of conservatism. In fact, I am a conservative, and the ones on the so-called right that I criticize are not conservative. They're populist. It's different. They're called conservatives nowadays, but they really aren't. And anyway,
Before we start, and I'll tell you what, I'm all over the place. I might even defer to Peter at the beginning because I am just all over the planet on this. But before we get into that, it just occurred to me as you were responding to what Peter said about some of the listeners and how they feel about, well, their impressions that you're not a conservative. What is the definition of a rhino politically?
Well, it stands R-I-N-O, Republican in name only.
Oh, okay. I never knew that. That's interesting.
Yeah. And so
it's an acronym.
It's an acronym. And what kills me about it is I'm a lifelong Republican. First time I voted, by the way, I was 18. I was freshman at Harvard and had been going to school for 5 years in Massachusetts, ended up being there for 10 years. That's where Bob is. And I made it my own decision to register and be a Republican in 1972, that election. And so I've been there the whole time. I was elected as a Republican congressman. I had the most pro-Reagan voting record in the New York delegation when I was in Congress.
By the way, Go ahead, John.
Well, let me just say, so at that time, I was in New York. I was 27 years old, very popular in the Reagan White House. Reagan was a Republican president. And one of the largest donors to all of our opponents, our Democratic opponents, was a guy named Donald Trump. He was a registered Democrat, gave money to virtually every Democrat, Bill Clinton, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris, gave money to all of them, gave money to my opponent each time I ran, Donald Trump. Now he's become a Republican. He's won the nomination 3 times in a row. But I don't really get where people who've come in with him into the Republican Party call me a rhino. And how does that work when I was there 25, 30 years before they were? They had the temerity to call me a rhino. I, a Reagan Republican, I'm a rhino. How does that work? The answer is it doesn't. The answer is it doesn't work. Okay?
It doesn't.
I'm a Republican. I don't say they're not Republicans. I never said that. But, you know, parties cannot work where one part of the party is angry at the other part and says, oh, you're not really a real member of our party. You don't see the Democrats doing that. They're uniting in order to win the election. Republicans are sitting here getting all ticked off. Trump's blasting people like me, like Liz Cheney, whoever, like Nikki Haley. Ah, we don't need her supporters. We're going to win anyway. No, politics is the art of addition, not subtraction.
And by the way, Ronald Reagan, in my opinion, was one of the best presidents this country ever had.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's my personal opinion.
Do you think President Reagan is considered a rhino?
Well, he was a Democrat.
No, but you understand the question I'm asking. You know,
well, he would today these Trump people, Reagan would hate them. You know, he'd hate what they're doing, sucking up to Vladimir Putin, wanting to get rid of NATO, all this stuff. That's not what conservatism and republicanism was, and it's all Trumpism. This is really for Trump. He does this stuff, and they follow him blindly. And I don't know what they would call Reagan. You know, I don't think it would be very good.
So, Congressman, last time we were on, it would seem like sort of normal, quote unquote, sort of normal times. You know, there was a campaign. Biden was going to be the Democrat nomination. Trump was going to be the Republican nomination. You and I talked about, you know, what the polls were saying or weren't saying. And, you know, it was sort of a normal kind of thing. Times have changed a lot. Can you sort of talk in your sort of your take? What happened since then?
I think the debate happened on June 27th or 17th, whatever it was. It was a disaster for Biden. It started at 9 p.m. East Coast time. At 9:37, I got a text from a friend of mine, a Democrat who used to work for me when he was a Republican. And he said, new candidate, Chicago, because that's where the convention was going to be. And turned out to be true, but it happened faster than Chicago. They had to get a new candidate. At that time, once the pressure was on for Biden to get out, there was all this talk. Remember, we're going to have some sort of selection process because the primaries were already over. Biden had won all the delegates to be renominated. But the pressure on him from elected officials and donors was so strong to get out that obviously he did get out. And immediately threw his support to his vice president, transferred his entire campaign apparatus and $80 million that was in the bank or whatever to her. And that was 5.5 weeks ago. She has raised since that day. Are you ready? $540 million. All the voters that were going to vote Democrat, but just couldn't bring themselves to vote for a decaying older candidate in Joe Biden and were sitting on the sidelines. They have come off the sidelines for her. The race is a totally different race than it was when I was last on with you guys. And no one is more surprised by it and flummoxed by it than Trump. Trump cannot figure out what to do. He just doesn't know how to run against Kamala Harris, and he's running out of time to figure it out. He's tried everything, saying she's not really black, she's stupid, she's Comrade Kamala. I mean,
he also called her a cackling hyena.
Okay. Yeah. See, all this, and none of it's working. I mean, it's not, that is not how you beat someone. How do you beat someone? I think you do side by side commercials, comparison commercials. I'm for this, this, and this. She's for this, this, and this, and show why your three things are better than hers. You know what I mean? A rational argument about why you should vote for me. The problem with Trump is he can't bring himself to do it. Can't control himself. When he's given a script by an obviously very competent campaign, he can't stick to the script. He just can't bring himself to talk about a tax policy or something. And he's got to get off and start talking about being eaten by sharks, Hannibal Lecter, wind farms, you know, all this stuff. And it is funny when you hear it, but it doesn't make any sense. And it's not working for him. He's not going up in the polls. She's going up.
Congressman, please reassure us that Kamala Harris is not going to defund the police. That's all I've been hearing, that she intends to do that. And that really disturbs
me. She's not going to defund the police. First of all, police don't work for the federal government, right? They are local and stately funded. Your police in Boston, Peter's in Oregon, mine in New York. Yeah, there's a little tinge of federal money that goes to states, but no, this is a local function. Has nothing to do with who's president, and she's not going to stop whatever the feds are doing. That's just somebody saying that to try to get you, Bob, ticked off, and it's working.
Okay, my next question is unrelated to the police question. There's been talk that the United States has spent $150 billion on illegal immigrants. Is this true?
Well, I read that in the paper. I read $120 billion.
That's a lot of money for people.
And that's not right. That's not the federal government. That's state and local governments having to support these people, educate them, give them medical care, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I don't know if that number's accurate, but I have read that number.
And I guess, though, the question is, this is one of we've talked about this before. You know, it's easy to quote these numbers, and it is a real problem, but there's not a really easy solution to it. I mean, you can freeze the border, but that creates its own set of problems. And, you know, the truth of the matter also is, paradoxically, is we don't have enough workers to fill certain jobs. And, you know, I wish we could find a solution that everybody could sort of live with. But, you know, there was this plan that this conservative Oklahoma person I can't remember the name, partnered with a Democrat to develop a plan that everybody seemed to live with. And President Trump said, no, I want this to be an issue for the campaign. You know, whoever wins the election is going to have to try to do something else. But that plan at that moment was the perfect plan. I don't know when such an opportunity will come again.
Well, that was Senator Lankford,
the
lead Republican negotiator.
Yep.
Designated by Mitch McConnell to lead the charge on this thing. Chris Murphy was one of the leads for the Democrats, along with Kristen Sinema, who's now an independent, the senator who's not running again from Arizona. And they did craft a bill that would have passed the Senate, would have probably passed the House, and Biden had already indicated, I'm going to sign it into law. And you're right. So Trump saw that as taking away one of his main issues in November. So he told the Republicans, get rid of it. So they got rid of it for the time being. That has now redounded to the benefit of the Democrats. They now, every time you bring up immigration, they say, we had a bill. We had this thing fixed. More border guards, more money, more blah, 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 blah. We had it all fixed, and Trump is the one who got rid of it. And you can bet when this comes up a week from Tuesday in this next debate, between first debate and only debate between Trump and Kamala Harris. When they get to immigration, she's going to throw that right at them and say, you are the one who killed this solution. Just like when it gets to abortion, she's going to say the same thing. You are the one, and you've been bragging about it. You're the one that got rid of Roe v. Wade, threw the states into turmoil, and have caused all this trouble when we didn't have to do it this way at all. And Trump is going to pay, he's going to pay a penalty for this stuff politically, I believe.
The only thing that the conservatives are arguing, and I think it's probably true, is that when President Biden came in, he overrode some of Trump's policies and the immigration, you know, increased pretty quickly. And so while there was a solution found, I think there is some truth to their statement that his relaxing of whatever happened is part of the problem.
Correct. Now, under political pressure, after this bipartisan bill was canceled, waylaid, put on the back burner, Biden was still running for reelection in the spring when he did what he did not want to do, but he had to do it for getting reelected. And he did an executive order that has basically frozen illegal immigration at the southern border. And it will not be, he knew when he did it, that a federal court somewhere is going to strike this thing down. But he did it to show that I'm doing something to address this problem. And illegal contacts at the southern border are now lower than they were when Trump left office. But it's a temporary solution. It doesn't fix the problem because it's not a law. It's an executive order that a court can overrule. And everyone agrees they will overrule it. These things take weeks, months, whatever. The real solution is to change all the laws.
Yeah.
And we have to get a handle on this and everything to do with immigration. And by the way, that means legal immigration too. Maybe it's too hard for people to come here. Peter mentions employment and employees. We do need more people to come work here because Americans aren't filling American jobs. I mean, computer programmers, can you believe it? We're short on computer programmers, and we have to have people come from overseas. Most of them are legally coming here to fill these jobs.
The problem is shelter.
Yep, that's a huge problem.
You know, where are these people going to live?
Yeah, it's all a problem. You know, it's all a problem. And, but, you know, for the sake of the campaign, the Democrats, the best they can do in the onslaught from Trump over immigration is neutralize the issue. And you neutralize it by bringing up that bipartisan bill and the fact that Trump killed a solution to this issue. And that gets the Democrats somewhat off the hook and you move on to talk about something else.
And the fact of the matter, as I understand, is that President Trump, when he was president, had the same problem, not enough
Correct.
Guards. I mean, this was not just a Biden.
And so did Obama. All three of
Obama,
them.
Right, exactly.
When yep. they were president, Biden too, now as president, all three have complained, I got to have the law changed to do what ought to be done. And by the way, all, you know, you can't just pack up people and throw them out of here. Trump says, oh, I'm going to have, you know, right away, mass deportations and concentration camps to lock them all up. No,
well,
he
had
not.
ICE working for him back then.
Yeah, but he's talking about it now. He said, when I get in there, I'm going to do mass deportations and I'm going to lock people up before we send them out of here. Well, he's not going to do any of that because the courts won't support that. Believe it or not, when people come in here claiming they want asylum, even though they, by the way, most of the ones who come here don't deserve asylum.
Right.
The rules on asylum have to do with political persecution. You can get asylum for that. You don't get it if you're the victim of crime or you're poor and your economy in your home country is terrible. So you've left there to come here, which is very admirable. We want, you know, but no, you don't get asylum for that. You have to come here through the legal process in your home country. But these people have hopped on the bandwagon and walked up here and barged across the border into America. And it's not easy to pack them up and move them out for their own rights. They do have rights. And if they have jobs and all, what's going to happen to all the businesses that have these people working for them? And what about the millions of them who are married to American citizens? So there are illegals in a house married to legals. Good luck figuring that out and getting those people out of there.
So this is where we get into the topic of pathway to citizenship, I would imagine.
Yeah. Which I got to tell you, I'm of a mixed bag. To me, if you come here illegally, cross the border illegally, come into America, I'm not sure you should ever get citizenship. I don't know that they deserve a pathway to citizenship. Or maybe the pathway is you got to leave, go back to your country, apply down there, and then maybe you can make it. But because if we start saying, okay, these 10 million people who came here cross the border illegally, all they got to do now is pay their taxes and pay a little fine, and then they get a green card and they're on track for citizenship. What does that say about the people who came here after waiting years in their home country to do it legally through the very arduous process and waited?
My grandparents did that. A lot of people's ancestors did that through Ellis Island. Whatever happened to those days?
But Ellis Island was, my recollection is it definitely existed, Ellis Island, but it was a much different time, wasn't it? I mean,
it was different. And people weren't just coming to Ellis Island.
Right.
That was the ones up here. They were going elsewhere in America, Baltimore, New Orleans, the West Coast, you know, and there was tons of illegals coming in then too.
Yeah.
I mean, there are like a million illegal Irish people in this country, or the offspring of Irish illegals who came here. And no one ever rounded them up.
And my concern, I mean, I sympathize with you or your take on it. The problem is, and everybody says this, the policy, the procedure to get into this country legally is just a minefield that you almost need to have an attorney to work with you to make this happen. Is that what we want?
You do need an attorney. Are you kidding me? Of course you do.
You know, so I mean, a part of the problem is that we've made it impossible. And when you make things impossible, people will find illegal ways to do it. It's not just immigration. It's small businesses. I work for an organization now that supports small businesses. And, you know, some of the regulations are ridiculous. And so people find a way to work around it. You know, that's the way the system, it shouldn't be that way perhaps, but it is, you know, so if I don't know where the balance is, but clearly the system is broken. The immigration.
Right. And then there are categories, you know, depending on what country you come from, the rules are different from people who come from Cuba versus Haiti, say, whether you land on dry land or not, whether you can be sent back. I mean, they're all this. And then there's the issue, which has never been settled, of the dreamers being kids brought here when they're children by their parents, and the parents came here illegally, bringing their kid with them. Now, the kid goes to public school. We, all of us on this call and our fellow Americans, are paying for that little child's public education. If they go to the emergency room, our insurance, our money is paying for that. That kid is growing up in America, going to American schools, and that kid in his or her head is an American kid. And they can join the army and fight for this country. That does happen. Several of them died in Iraq and Afghanistan. Colin Powell went to their funerals and talked about it. These are kids who grew up in America, believe in America, think like Americans. Their friends are Americans. They're fighting for America. And they didn't break the law of their own volition when they came here as children. I'm of the belief they should become American citizens. We've invested in those young people. They're now adults. We want them to be Americans if they want to be. That I I have no problem with that. That's just one category of dozens of categories. How about students from foreign countries who come here on a student visa, right? They go to UCLA, University of Minnesota, whatever they study, and then they don't leave. The visa runs out and they just stay here illegally. They have a job. Somehow they work around the illegality of it. I don't know. Are we going to round them up and get rid of them? How do we round them up? How do we find them? I mean, the whole thing is a mess. And they're part of the estimated 20 plus million illegal people in this country.
Congressman, I want to do a quick turn before we throw them to the audience. The Middle East seems to be getting from bad to worse. You know, Israel and the Palestinians and the Lebanese. And what is your sort of take on what's going on? And what do you see as a, if there is one, a possible solution?
Well, it doesn't get talked about enough, but the termite in the woodpile of the Middle East, the force that is rotting it out, is the revolutionary government of Iran. Iran is behind Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, all the forces that are against not just Israel, but against the United States and against democracy. All of that, the money and the armaments, come from Tehran. That's now what to do about it is a huge issue. In the short run, if no one's going to take out the Iranian government, and they're a bad actor, and they're dedicated to getting a nuclear bomb. They're making weapons that the Russians are using in Ukraine, by the way. The drones that are going in to Ukraine from Russia are manufactured in Iran. So they've got a part of the blame for that debacle too. In the short run though, the Gaza thing needs to get calmed down. And I'm unsure if Netanyahu wants it to calm down. I'm not sure he doesn't want the conflict to keep going, because as long as it keeps going, he is the prime minister. There's no election. There's no court of inquiry about what happened last October 7th, what the Israeli government knew leading up to it. There's quite a bit of reporting that the Israeli government, a year earlier, had obtained the plans for this surprise attack. They didn't know when it was going to be, but the scope of it, they allegedly knew. And Netanyahu okayed over $1 billion from Qatar to be given to Hamas to keep them going inside Gaza. And, you know, what did that money go for? It went for rockets, mortars, guns, bullets, all that stuff. And yet here's the Israeli government allowing that payment to be made. We don't know if that's true. That's why they're going to do an inquiry about it, but they're not doing the inquiry till after the war in Gaza is finished. So there's an incentive for Netanyahu to keep the war going. Plus, no doubt he wants to get the hostages. And it doesn't seem that negotiating is getting the job done.
It also seems to me that the government, the parties that are in coalition with the Netanyahu government, many of them are sort of the hardcore folks.
Religious fanatics.
Well, you're right. Who believe that Gaza, Palestine belongs exclusively to Israel. And they quote the Bible and they do this and this. And I think they're the ones who are in control. And, you know, I keep hearing stories about how, you know, they're sort of with the government's behind their backs blessing, you know, routing people, Palestinians, out of their homes and burning things down and shooting people and all this kind of stuff. Again, you don't know how much of this is true, but given, you know, who is in the Netanyahu government, I don't know how this gets resolved. And it might, what I worry about is it's going to expand. You know, Lebanon is now the latest part of all of this. And I don't know how this gets calmed down.
Well, I don't either. And I think the United States government's doing its best to try to get it to calm down. I think they're extremely frustrated with a Netanyahu. But it's also difficult to negotiate with Hamas when the now leader of Hamas, Sinwar, is somewhere in the tunnels underneath Gaza, has no communication. A guy from Israel this summer told me, I've never seen this reported, but he told me that Hamas uses carrier pigeons to send messages around. That they come up out of the tunnel, let a pigeon go with a message taped to one of its talons, and that's how they communicate. Because if they use electronics, the Israelis will find them.
So I wonder how the pigeons know where to go. That's the funny part.
Well, pigeons are trained. They're trained.
Carrier pigeons could do this stuff. I mean, that's the way their messages were conveyed 100 years ago or however long ago it was.
Yeah. Congressman, I have one more brief topic before we turn it over to our participants. On July 13th, former President Trump was at crossfire with a gun, almost assassinated. Yeah. What do you think of this whole Secret Service debacle since that incident?
Debacle is a mild term for
it.
How they let that guy get on that roof. Why they wasn't inside our perimeter, was outside. Well, who made up this perimeter? The Secret Service did. They could have either had people over there to prevent this or put up a couple of cranes with tarpaulins on them to block the view from any open area around the stage where Trump was. I don't know why they didn't do any of it. And I don't understand why. It's terrible. I know there's a staffing and budget problem with the Secret Service. They need more and more agents to cover all the people that got to get covered. But that's inexcusable. My God, I mean, and the local police saw the guy up there with the gun, jumped off the, jumped down from the roof 40 seconds, I think it is, before Trump got on the stage. And they radioed it, but they weren't on the same radio frequency. How screwed up is that? So it's terrible, terrible. Thank God he wasn't killed. But a firefighter, a fan of Trump, that guy Corey Campanelli, he was killed. That's an incredible dereliction.
And, I am just... As you said, thank God that Trump wasn't assassinated, because I think we'd be in a very different space and not in a good space if he had been killed.
Of course. Yeah.
I dread to think what would have happened.
Yeah. And only after this now does the Secret Service approve a bulletproof glass surrounding Trump. Well, why weren't we doing that all along?
And presumably other candidates as well, right? I mean,
Yeah. And I've seen Kamala Harris she definitely had an outdoor event in Wisconsin and she had one in Michigan since then. And I guess the Secret Service felt safe that it was safe. I don't know. But I remember 1968, and in a 2-month period, we had Martin Luther King assassinated and Bobby Kennedy assassinated. And we cannot resort to that way to solve our problems. That's not going to go
well. And that assassination has totally turned politics into a much more uglier sport, I think, as it were. I just think that was that turned things around for the worse, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the Secret Service has been elevated after those. Even back then, candidates didn't really have any protection. Even in 72, George Wallace is running, and this nutbag Arthur Bremmer shoots him in, I think it was Silver Spring, Maryland. And
paralyzed
from the waist down. And, and then even in 76, candidates didn't get Secret Service till they reached some sort of threshold of votes and money and this and that. And, you look at this year in the primaries, people like Nikki Haley, she didn't get Secret Service protection. Obviously, Trump has it for life as a former president. Vance is now getting it. Obviously, Harris as vice president gets it. Her running mate is now getting it.
Waltz.
Yeah, Governor Waltz. And there are other people who get it and family members who get it. Takes a lot of agents. They got to have 3 shifts a day. It's a lot of, it's big bucks to do this. Well, we got to do it. We have to protect people. There are nuts out there. It appears that the guy that shot Trump was a nut. It's not like a concerted thing, but the Secret Service spends most of their time protecting against nuts. And they saw the nut. They had contact with the nut that day. That's how they knew he had one of those golf range finders on and he was using it. What the hell are you using one of those things for? You're not looking to play golf at a presidential rally.
I would like to turn the festivities over.
Before we do that, Bob, could you spend 30 seconds, Congressman, talking about your take on potential Vice President Vance?
I don't think he's helping the ticket at all, to be truthful. I think if Trump could do it over again, he wouldn't have picked him. He can't get rid of him now, but he's just everything he says. I don't really know what the point of it is. I mean, is he bringing voters to the Republican ticket that they weren't going to get otherwise? It's talking about childless cat ladies and all this nonsense. And then teachers who don't have children shouldn't teach, forgetting Catholic nuns have educated a huge percentage of people in this country. I just think the guy, I think he's a lousy choice, but in the end, it won't matter. It's going to be Kamala Harris versus Trump. That's always the way it is. The VP choices in the end don't count.
Yeah.
You're welcome. You're listening to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco and he's Peter Altschul. Our guest is former New York Congressman John LeBoutelier. And it's time now to turn it over to our participants.
First up is Rodney.
Okay. Yes. Hi, Congressman. Rodney. Congressman, thank you for being here. And Mr. Branco and Peter, thank you for letting us have this time to speak with you. My question is a little different than some of the questions that have been asked before, but I'm glad you're here because you are a Republican. I am also a Republican, but I am not a Trump Republican. And one of the problems that I've had in the last couple of years is that I have not seen the Republicans reaching out to the disability community or addressing any of our concerns in a concerted effort. Now, and the Democrats do that. Is there a way that we as people with disabilities, for those of us who are conservatives, could reach out to Republicans and ask them to at least consider some of the issues? Because the problem is they don't put forth any plans or any way of dealing with some of the problems we have as people with disabilities. And they don't address it. That's all. Thank you very much.
So, Rodney, I couldn't agree with you more. I got to tell you a story. When I was running for Congress at 26 years old, one of Reagan's kitchen cabinet, one of those really rich guys, was supporting me heavily, Justin Dart.
Yeah.
And Justin Dart had a son named Justin Dart Jr. And back in the 1950s, Mr. Dart was playing golf with President Eisenhower, and the Secret Service came running up to them and said, there's an emergency telephone call for Mr. Dart. And they take him away in a golf cart. We didn't have cell phones yet. It takes him away to some place with his telephone. Long story short, the call was from a hospital telling him that his son, Justin Dart Jr., had been stricken with polio. And Mr. Dart gets back to the golf, tells President Eisenhower. And that was the impetus for President Eisenhower to mandate polio vaccines for everybody and every kid in the country, which I had. I don't know, Bob and Peter, if you're old enough. Yeah, we all had it, you know. And okay, so now Justin Dart Jr. is confined to a wheelchair, grows up, and becomes something in his own right. I don't know exactly what he did. He was one of the leading forces in getting the Americans with Disabilities Act passed in the House and Senate. And when it was signed into law, who was right there? Bob Dole, a disabled World War II veteran. and Mr. Dart's son was a man, not a kid anymore, in a wheelchair. They were big Republicans who led the charge for this thing, along, as you say, with Democrats. I don't see any Republicans talking about this thing anymore. And Trump himself has a dismissive attitude about people who are injured, wounded, sick. He doesn't like them, doesn't want to be seen around them. It's horrible. And he mocked that reporter back in 2016, the guy from the New York Times who had a disability.
He has a disabled son. Trump does.
Well, they don't admit that. No, he doesn't have a disabled son. His nephew, Fred Trump, has a disabled son.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. Now, Trump's son, Barron, who we don't know, hasn't been a public figure, but it has been reported, I don't know if it's accurate, that he's on the spectrum, as many kids are, the autistic spectrum. I don't know if that's true. But Trump seems very unsympathetic, very non-empathetic towards people with disabilities. And he's the leader of the party. And I much prefer a Bob Dole who really was into it because he knew what it was like when he basically lost his arm on the beach in Italy, landing in the war.
Go ahead.
Well, two things that we should also, the Republicans could really have capitalized on was, of course, President George H.W. Bush. It was signed, the ADA was signed during his administration and he did not oppose it. And George W. Bush, his disability person was Ole Kantos, who some of us know who he is. And I actually know Ole pretty well, but he was one of the few people that actually stayed through the whole 8 years in the disability, you know, advisory capacity. But I think like the Republicans need to kind of deal with that. And I think we need to figure out a way to reach out to Republicans to kind of get them to do it. But every time I've tried, and I have friends in the Heritage Foundation, and they're like, they're not mean or anything, but they don't know how to deal with it. And I'm
Rodney, let me tell you something. You shouldn't be having to reach out to them. They should be reaching out to you. It's what I said a few minutes ago. Politics is the art of addition, adding voters to your total to get enough to win and then to govern. It shouldn't be that you have to reach out to them. I get your point. I know what you mean. But what needs to happen is this present group of Republican leaders needs to be defeated. And they need to realize when they get defeated why they lost and that they became arrogant, insensitive, smug, thinking they didn't have to reach out. And it isn't just the disabled voters. It's all voters. Do we really think the Republicans have reached out to people of color? Do we think they've reached out to young people? I was going to get to them.
Yeah.
Definitely to women. But, you know, all the groups they're doing badly in, they haven't tried. They don't even understand it, you know.
I don't think it's a matter of, I think it's worse than that. I think they've deliberately chosen not to do it. You said it, Congressman, that President Trump doesn't like people who look weird, who are disabled. And I think he does, you know, the whole dynamic, I think they built a wall of hostility to keep out people like me, for example.
Thank you for answering my question. I apologize for taking
thanks, so long.
No, I think it was a great answer.
Rodney, it's great, Rodney. No apologies, man.
We appreciate your contribution, Rodney. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Tim, who's next?
Next up, we have Penny.
Hi, Penny.
Hey, how are y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, Penny.
Thank you for coming on. I think I've heard you before and I've commented, you know, this is what frustrates me about this election. I guess I don't really feel like I have a political home in a lot of ways because I'm a strong Christian. I guess I'd be labeled as an evangelical, but I do not agree with the positions that so many evangelicals are taking about Trump. I do not believe he was called by God to lead our country. I do not believe he is an honest man. I do not see him as a good man. And I honestly, as a person who is totally blind, I can't support him because he does not, as you all said, doesn't have any compassion or understanding or interest in working on disability issues, let alone working with women. And my feeling is that, you know, the more he opens his mouth, the deeper the hole he digs. And I hope he is defeated because, and that whole MAGA group, because I remember a wonderful time when you could choose to be Republican or Democrat, and it didn't mean that you were not a Christian or that you were not faithful to your principles, that we could honestly disagree and get along. And I wish for that day, and I grieve that so many people in the evangelicals don't understand or don't see Trump for who he is, because he knows how to tell people what they want to hear, and they just swallow it up.
Well, Penny, how could we disagree with a word you said? I mean, you're absolutely right on. It has baffled me to watch good, honest, evangelical Americans, white evangelicals, by the way.
Yes.
Right. Who have bought this Trump act when in fact Trump is the single most immoral and amoral man ever to run for president. Ever. Not even close. I used to think Bill Clinton was the Antichrist. Well, Bill Clinton is a choir boy compared to Donald Trump.
For the
Republican Party to have embraced this guy. So that you're talking evangelicals. I'm talking in the political context. The Republican Party, which used to be anti-communist, conservative on fiscal stuff, and a big believer in morality, all those things, all out the window with Trump, all gone. They don't stand for anything. It is a cult of personality, not a viable political party.
And that's the whole reason that you were saying earlier that, you know, we were saying, why is this happening with Republicans? And I think the answer is very clear. It's a cult.
Yeah.
And until they wake up and realize, and I think there are going to be a lot of people that are going to be very deceived and that are going to wish that they had not supported Trump. And I don't know what it's going to take for that to happen, but I honestly believe that day is going to come.
Well, I think so. I hope so. But Penny, here's what is also likely. These people buy everything Trump tells them. Trump has already begun doing again what he did the last time, which is, well, if I lose, it's only because the other side cheated.
Uh-huh.
So if he loses this time, and let's say Kamala Harris beats him 52-47, you know, 5 points with a point or two going to third parties. That's a big victory in a head-to-head race. 5 points is big. Trump is still going to say, oh, the thing was rigged. They stole it. Whatever he's going to say. How many of these people are still going to believe that from him? You know, I mean, how big a margin does she have to win by until it's obvious that Trump legitimately lost in the eyes of those people? It seems to me they believe anything he tells them, and they've checked out in terms of their own thinking, their own rational thought. I'm amazed that people in this country can't think for themselves.
I'm amazed too. It disturbs me greatly.
And I just want to add, you said something that was really important, Congressman, the white conservative, because it is that those folk, many of the leaders, who are so horrified by things like teaching some form of African American history in high schools. The whole critical race theory and all these, and there are problems with all this stuff. I'm not going to, that's the word that, but you know, they are running as fast as they can to prevent people from learning the truth about how ugly some of us were at some point in our history. And unless we understand it, we're not going to be able to move forward. We're just not. as a culture. And I am sort of disgusted with the whole conservative evangelical movement. And my opinion doesn't count because what does count is young people are fleeing those churches like the plague. I've talked to many of them and they don't want to be around a church like that. And I don't blame them personally.
Well, so. I do want to say this, and I know I'm taking up time, but I want y'all to know that just because a person is evangelical doesn't mean they embrace Trump. No. I certainly don't. And I just need to say that because I feel very strongly. I am turning 71 and I have never seen anything so horrifying. And my dad would turn over in his grave, you know, and I just want y'all don't put all even white evangelicals in a box, that I just want to say that. So, you know, I don't belong in that. I don't go along with that. And it does disturb me. Young people leaving and I can understand why they are, you know, because they don't want a part of that.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Thank you, Penny. I appreciate the comments and your point is well taken.
Thanks for your contribution, Penny. Yeah, Tim, do we have anybody?
By the way, if I could just say something about, you know, the evangelical movement got that when they got in bed with Donald Trump, they did get these three Supreme Court justices who overturned Roe v. Wade after they promised not to do so during their confirmation hearings, but they did it anyway. They got rid of it. Okay. And that has become a huge negative politically for the Republicans. They lost virtually every campaign in 2022 and 2023 and four, all of them on abortion and state referenda, all that stuff. Now in the last few days, Trump is now running around changing his positions on these things, including on the abortion ban in Florida, where he's a resident, and IVF. And the reason he's changing is he sees how much he's being hurt by the abortion issue. And so I think there's a chance he'll so flip-flop around on this thing, especially in the debate on September 10, to try to reverse his fortune, that he's going to tick off a lot of these pro-life evangelicals. They saw him as the guy that got rid of Roe v. Wade, and now all of a sudden he's backtracking again. Cause he doesn't have any principles on the thing. Just looking for votes. That's all.
We have about 4 minutes to go. So let me find out if there are any more hands raised. Maybe we have time for at least one more. Tim?
Yeah. We have Tony.
All right, Tony, go for it. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Congressman, I hope you can talk seriously about this just for the few minutes we have left. I'm very concerned about the meanness and the nastiness of the, I'm just going to say the Republican approach for right now, because there's an awful lot of it. And it's been like this. One could say this all started way back when Newt Gingrich started a trend toward this kind of aggressiveness. But I mean, just the other day, Vance said something about Harris, she can go to hell. And it's the meanness and the nastiness that we see so much coming from that side that I'm wondering if you could talk about a little bit.
Okay, I'd love to. I grew up and became a Republican, as I talked about, and ran as a Reagan Republican. And Reagan didn't do stuff like that. Reagan used humor. And Reagan was an upbeat, positive fellow. And when I got elected, we had a huge class of incoming Republicans who won with Reagan in 1980. And they were all that way. They were smiling, good guys in the mold of Reagan. And I think you do reflect the head of your party. And now the head of the party is a mean, cruel, self-absorbed narcissist named Donald Trump, and his acolytes think that's the way to go. And so Vance is one of them. Tom Cotton, Josh Hawley, Kevin McCarthy. A lot of these guys are that way. They think that's the way to go.
Don't forget about Margaret Taylor Greene and all those guys.
Oh, God, yeah. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and all of them. And it's, by the way, it's not going to work for them. They're going to lose the House of Representatives. They'll keep their seats because they come from red areas, but it's not the way to go. You might get somewhere in the short run, but in the long run, our system rewards people who work together and get things done and are somewhat near the middle of the spectrum. People way out left and right, they don't last. They don't. Thank God our country pushes the system to work in the middle. It could be a little to the right or left, but not far out. So.
Anything else, Tony, in the last 30 seconds or so that we have?
Well, yeah, I'm hoping that if you get a more conservative person to come on the show, that they will not be mean and nasty. I won't stick around for it if that's what I see happening. I just hope that they won't be mean and nasty, but I predict they will be.
Congressman, you're a friend of this guy. Talk to us about that a little bit.
Okay. I've recommended a guy named John Kizzy, who I've known since 1979, who's a top flight reporter in DC, now works for Newsmax, which is conservative, but Gizzy is not mean in any way. Very polite, devout Catholic who will analyze politics right down to every little issue, but he is not in any way mean or judgmental, or he's a great human being. So I think you'll all enjoy him. And if you don't, it's on me.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
Tony, thanks for your contribution. And Congressman, thank you once again. And we're going to have you back one more time prior to our election. We can assess things then.
In October.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And thanks, when I'm everyone. Back, they'll be voting already. So.
Yep. They're going to start voting a month ahead because of early voting that we now have. So that'd be interesting. Thanks, everyone. I'm Bob Branco. He's Peter Alcho. Congressman John LeBoutelier, thanks again. And we'll have you back in a couple more months.
And happy Labor Day, everybody.
Take care.
Yeah.
Happy Labor Day.
Thank you.